This is a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei ata. Kei te whakarunga mai koe ki te reo I rangi kotahi. Ko Zach toku ingoa.
Ko Amiria taku ingoa.
And you're listening to the Radio 1 te reo I rangi kotahi news show for Rāmere, te ono o Haratua.
Coming up on today's program, we have our weekly segment, Business as Usual, with economics lecturer Trent Smith to talk about changes to the government's debt ceiling in relation to the upcoming budget announcement on the 19th of May. We have a feature from Zach about the leaked US Supreme Court draft opinion on abortion rights and what impact this could have in Aotearoa. Then, we will speak with Professor Anita Gibbs from the Department of Social and Community Work at Otago University about the prevalence of those with neurodisabilities, such as FASD, in the criminal justice system, the challenges people with these disabilities face, and what can be done to address this problem. After that, we'll have the astrology report, and lastly, we'll be speaking with General Manager of the Otago Farmers Market, Michelle Driscoll, about our weekly segment, Off to Market.
Up next, we have news and weather with Eileen Corcoran. But before that, we'll have music from Otepoti locals Astro Children with their song Eden. Stay tuned. That was Otepoti outfit, Astro Children with their song Eden. Up now we have Eileen with news and weather.
This is the news on Radio 1 91 FM.
Tēnā koutou, ko Eileen tēnei. A person has been injured after an explosion on George Street in Dunedin. The injured person is a worker on the George Street upgrade and has been taken to hospital in a serious condition after being treated at the scene. The cause of the explosion, which occurred on the farmer's block, has not yet been confirmed. Staff has reported that a digger may have cut through an electrical cable at the site. The Mycoplasma bovis outbreak, which has plagued cattle farms across Aotearoa for the last 5 years, has been isolated to just one farm. Since its detection on a South Canterbury farm in 2017, Mycoplasma bovis has been found on over 271 farms, leading to the culling of more than 176,000 cattle. The disease causes arthritis, mastitis, late-term abortions and pneumonia. Minister of Agriculture Damien O'Connor has said that the single farm still infected is a beef feedlot, and work to clear it will begin later this year. A ceasefire is needed in besieged Ukrainian city Mariupol in order for trapped civilians to be evacuated, according to President Volodymyr Zelensky. The city has been host to the largest battle in Russia's invasion of Ukraine. On April 21st, Russia declared victory over the city. However, Ukrainian forces continue to hold a large steelworks in the city, with hundreds of civilians in bunkers inside. Zelensky says time is needed to evacuate those civilians, and a truce is needed for this to happen, as it must be done by hand. And that was the bulletin on the R1 News. Now, the weather.
The Radio 1 91 FM weather.
You'd hardly believe it's May in Otipoti as we head into the weekend. I tēnei rā, expect a high of 20 with clear sunny skies and some possible fog along the coast in the evening. Apōpō, a whopping high of 21 is forecast, with some cloud in the afternoon and northerly breezes.
Thank you so much for that, Eileen. Coming up next on the program, we have University of Otago economist Trent Smith coming to speak to Amiria about the national budget and debt ceilings. But first, we have Angus and Julia Stone with The Beast. Stay tuned.
Work here is done. A slave to the beast. No mercy with time. No mercy with time. They brand you with the fire and push you into the sun. They want the free land to expire. They want
by the blade. Stomping.
That was The Beast by Angus and Julia Stone. It is 12 minutes past 11 and time for our weekly segment, Business as Usual, with Trent Smith from the Department of Economics here at Otago University. This week, we're going to be talking about debt ceilings. Kia ora, Trent. How's it going?
Kia ora, Maria. I'm well, thanks.
So during the pre-budget speech on Tuesday, Finance Minister Grant Robertson announced a new debt ceiling for Aotearoa at 30% of GDP. My first question for you is, what is a debt ceiling and how does it shape our GDP and policy?
So there's this thing called the national debt, right? Mm-hmm. And it's really, it's something that we actually keep track of by choice. It's like, it's not, it's really not a real thing. The idea is that, governments tax and spend, and if they spend more than they tax, then you have a deficit for that year. And that deficit, if it's not made up for some other way, has to be added to the national debt. Right? So we sort of have this running tally of how much the government hasn't collected enough taxes to pay its expenses over the years. And this is for the entire life of the country, more or less.
Yeah.
Right. So it's the debt number is a number that stays pretty stable from year to year. And so the debt limit is actually set by New Zealand government. That's why the government can talk about changing it. The debt limit in principle is sort of says, oh, listen, you government, you can't go above this, right? If you go above this, you've got to raise taxes or cut mm-hmm. spending or something. And normally, I don't know, debt limits are honestly a pretty bad idea. and if they ever become binding, like, oh no, we're going to hit the debt limit, we have to do something drastic, like, it's probably a bad idea. If it wasn't a good idea to do this policy, whatever it is you're talking about, without the debt limit, it's probably also not a good idea to do it because of the debt limit. So what the government's doing announced this week is they're actually changing the way they calculate the debt limit. So to be more in line with international standards, which is mm-hmm. appropriate, I guess. And under the new calculations, I guess we have, New Zealand has a 20% of GDP as our debt limit. And the limit's going to be 30%. So we'll have a lot of room under this system. There's this bigger problem of, should we care about the national debt?
Yeah.
Right? And I kind of alluded to that just now when I said, oh, actually, that limit should never be binding. You know, we should be making decisions based on other things. And back in 2010, so after the global financial crisis, sort of in the wake of the global financial crisis, the U.S. government was spending a bunch of money and there was, concern about, and on top of that, there was a big recession. So tax revenues had gone down. And so sort of the debt was going up beyond what it had been. And especially as a percent of GDP, right? Because GDP goes down during recession. And so there was actually a paper published by two economists from Harvard, Reinhardt and Rogoff. You might remember the names if you were following the news back then. You guys weren't, your parents might remember this. There was the paper by Reinhardt and Rogoff from Harvard who argued that if I forget what the threshold number was, they took like international data on debt ratios, and they said, our data on this shows that if your country's debt to GDP ratio goes above this. And I forget what it was, 50% or 70% or something of GDP. If it goes above this, then you're in trouble, all right? And their data shows that your economy goes in the toilet if mm-hmm. you go above the threshold. Now, I don't know. If we had more time, we could get into the politics of economic policy. But the whole idea of talking about debts and debt limits is actually kind of from the right wing of economics, right? It's a club that's sometimes used to induce austerity policies, right?
Yeah.
Higher taxes, less spending. So when Reinhardt and Rogoff published this paper and said, oh no, the U.S. might be getting close to this threshold, we should really stop all this stimulating spending we're doing, even though we're still in a recession. And it was hugely popular, like, in the right-wing media, right? So they got to go on Fox News and mm-hmm. talk about this terrible thing the government's doing, and it wasn't just Fox News. It was pretty very widely spread in the media. The funny thing about the episode was that not too long after their paper was published, there was a PhD student over in, I forget his name. I want to say he worked at University of Mass. He was studying at University of Massachusetts or something. But he would this postgrad student tried to replicate the results in this famous paper, and he found he couldn't replicate them.
Wow.
So he emailed the authors.
Yeah.
He emailed Carmen Reinhart, and said, "Hey, listen, I'm not able to replicate. Can you tell me something more about what you did?" And so the author of the paper literally emailed him her Excel spreadsheet that she had done that they had done the calculations in.
Uh-huh.
And this postgrad student found a big mistake in it.
Oh my goodness.
Like the cell reference was wrong or something, and when he corrected the cell reference, the result completely disappeared.
Gosh.
Right? So, of course, this pushback from the left that debt ratio shouldn't matter, sort of upset this result that had been all over the news. But of course, the new thing didn't make the news, right? You still left people thinking that debt is important.
Right. Yeah. So on that topic of how important debt is, in reality, New Zealand doesn't have that much debt, especially in comparison to other countries. Why do you think the government is focusing on this issue? Why are we so concerned with ideas like debt?
Well, honestly, it's because people like you and I are, talking about it, right? It's we treat our in the popular press, we treat the government budget as if it were a household budget.
Yeah.
It's not a household budget, right? We literally print the money. There is no limit. Spend up three times the debt, and this wouldn't be costless, right? You'd create a massive inflation, but mm-hmm. it's probably the inflation you should be worrying about, not the debt. Like that, the debt number is pretty meaningless.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
And this is just what the evidence says.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I'm not making this up. There's no evidence that there's a strong effect of a certain level of debt on your economy.
You said earlier that this change is going to be, they're changing how they measure debt and GDP. What effect would that have on other things that are shaped by GDP, like the CPI, Consumer Price Index, and things like that?
It should have no effect. This is just accounting. So the way they used to calculate the debt was it didn't take account of things like government assets and government liabilities of New Zealand superannuation and things like this.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so now they're going to take account of those things when they report their debt numbers. They're still going to report it the old way so economists like me will still have the historical numbers to compare. But now they're going to have this new number, which is their headline number, which is more consistent with how other countries mm-hmm. calculate it.
And so will that make us look better or worse in comparison?
Oh, I think it actually does make us look better.
Okay,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it looks like... I forget the number. I think our current debt ratio is something like 35%, and it goes down to 20% with this new method.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming in, Trent. That was really eye-opening today.
Sweet. Up next, we will hear about the leaked U.S. Supreme Court draft opinion in favor of overturning Roe v.ersus Wade and what this means for abortion rights in the States and the impact it could have on New Zealand. But first, a song. This is Ring of Fire by none other than Johnny Cash.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring, bound by wild desire. I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher, and it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. Fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher, and it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. The taste of love is sweet when hearts like ours meet. I fell for you like a child. Oh, but the fire went wild. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
That was Ring of Fire by none other than US country legend Johnny Cash. Just before, we had University of Otago economist Trent Smith coming to talk about the national debt and debt ceilings. And up now we have a feature about abortion. So just a little bit of context. Protests have erupted across the United States this week following a groundbreaking revelation that the US Supreme Court has, in a draft opinion, declared that it wants to overturn Roe v. Wade. I spoke with Abortion Law Reform Association of New Zealand representative Emma Shepherd and senior gender studies lecturer Rebecca Stringer from the University of Otago to discuss what this opinion means for abortion rights across the world and in Aotearoa, how this opinion will empower the anti-choice movement, and what people can do to help those seeking abortions. Listener discretion is advised.
Earlier this week, a Supreme Court initial draft opinion was leaked to news outlet Politico, which showed that a majority of Supreme Court justices are in favour of overturning the constitutional right to have an abortion. Despite issues regarding access to abortion in certain United States territories, people who need to seek abortion healthcare have enjoyed the federally protected constitutional right to abortion after the famous Roe v. Wade court case, which marked a significant turning point in abortion rights. The leaked opinion has caused widespread outrage in the US, with protests springing up in Seattle, Portland, Oregon, Boston, Sacramento, and perhaps most significantly in Washington, D.C., where thousands are rallying outside the Supreme Court building to voice their frustration. U.S. President Joe Biden has labeled the opinion a fundamental shift in American jurisprudence, warning that same-sex marriage and other constitutional rights may be at risk as well. This is because when Roe v. Wade went to the Supreme Court and won in 1973, it did so on the grounds of the constitutional right to privacy. Historically, this right to privacy has been interpreted by Supreme Justices as coming under the 14th Amendment, which addresses citizenship rights and equal protection for all under US law. The constitutional right to privacy argument is what made same-sex marriage a fundamental right in 2015. If abortion can be overturned despite coming under the right to privacy, Biden's warning over losing other constitutional rights is not a far cry. Should the draft opinion go through the Supreme Court unchanged, an estimated 26 southern and midwestern states would immediately ban abortion, giving those seeking the controversial healthcare option no choice but to either travel out of state for an abortion, carry the pregnancy to term, or seek unsafe and unregulated solutions. Senior gender studies lecturer from the University of Otago, Rebecca Stringer, highlights that anti-abortion lawmakers in some states, such as Texas, have been preparing for decades to overturn Roe v. Wade by implementing legislation that prohibits abortion-seeking teens from crossing state lines, with Stringer warning that this will become even more damaging if Roe v. Wade is overturned.
Several states would be immediately affected by the overturn, and then there's kind of a time delay, right, where state legislatures have to align themselves with whatever the Supreme Court is saying. And so we're going to see a whole lot of struggles around that. That law around transporting pregnant teens across state lines to get an abortion, that will probably be used more. I think we'll see more people being booked under that. So there'll be a kind of heightened criminalization of adjacent activities around abortion as well.
Stringer noted that the Supreme Court opinion is an example of American exceptionalism, as abortion advocates worldwide have helped push governments to decriminalise abortion, with Ireland, Aotearoa and certain Australian states decriminalising abortion in recent memory.
I totally agree that pro-life or anti-abortion movements will become emboldened, will find in this a kind of confirmation that their politics is getting somewhere. But against that, I would say, nah, the global momentum is toward decriminalisation.
Fox Meyer, a University of Otago student originally from Washington, D.C., says the opinion is indicative of a wider system failure of democracy and that the Supreme Court is more concerned about punishing pregnant people than helping reduce abortion.
Getting rid of this right doesn't actually prevent abortions from happening. It just restricts the ability to make safe, conscious decisions about what you want to do with your body. It's unsurprising given the political climate, but it's surprising given what we would expect a normal, decent, compassionate human to let other decent, compassionate humans do.
Though this is all unfolding in the United States, Alice Shepherd from the Abortion Law Reform Association of New Zealand says if the Supreme Court opinion becomes law and Roe v. Wade is overturned, it will embolden the anti-choice movement both domestically and abroad.
I mean, Christopher Luxon, after a bit of pressure, has said that he's not going to repeal abortion law reform, and he voted in favour of safe areas at its third reading. But what we do worry about is that it's going to embolden anti-choice protesters outside of clinics and outside of facilities where abortion care is provided. We worry that any win is going to give them more oxygen than they need, and they're going to cause more trouble because the new safe areas bill has just passed, but there still has to be a process to implement those safe areas. And we worry that with this act, it could embolden them.
Shepherd says New Zealanders can help those seeking abortion directly by donating to abortion action funds, Planned Parenthood, and by making sure abortion rights remain strong here in Aotearoa.
Definitely, you can donate to abortion action funds. If you're having to travel out of state to get an abortion or travel quite far, even within a state, it's very, very expensive. It requires several days off work. It requires the transportation costs. And also there's just the cost of the procedure. So all those factors kind of add up a cost like that. So that really is the best way that we can help. We can also help and make sure that it doesn't happen in New Zealand. And we can send people in America our thoughts. You know, they know that the world is with them. They know that what is happening is wrong.
That was Zach Hoffman looking into the leaked US Supreme Court draft opinion in favour of overturning Roe v. Wade and the impact this could have on abortion rights across the world.
Up next, Amelia will be talking with Professor Anita Gibbs about the prevalence of those with neurodisabilities in the criminal justice system. It is 11:29, and time for a song. This is What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. Stay tuned on R1 News.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Big party, man.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer. For only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love in here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality.
That was Marvin Gaye with What's Going On. Currently on the program we have Amiria, who will be talking to Professor Anita Gibbs about the relationship between fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and the criminal justice system.
Fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, FASD, refers to a group of conditions that individuals whose mothers drank alcohol during their pregnancy are born with. There is no cure for FASD, so effects such as intellectual disabilities, behavioral problems, and even heart defects will last a lifetime. Any alcohol consumption during pregnancy can expose a child to developing FASD, and in severe cases, it can cause children to die before birth. Today, we are joined by Professor Anita Gibbs from the Department of Social and Community Work here at Otago University to discuss the prevalence of those with neurodisabilities such as FASD in the criminal justice system, the challenges people with these disabilities face, and what can be done to address this problem. Kia ora, Anita, are you there?
Yeah, kia ora to everyone.
I just wanted to start by getting to understand a little bit more about these neurodisabilities, and in particular FASD.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are a range of neurodisabilities. FASD is just one of them, and that's one of the ones that we know about because of the aspects to do with drinking, you know, before children are born. And there are issues in our drinking culture, of course, around how that actually happens. So it's not just a woman's problem. It's actually all of society's problem. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there are other neurodisabilities that are familiar to people, ADHD, autism, acquired brain injury, where people have had brain injuries and then, you know, basically been impacted across the life course, communication disorder. So, but FASD is probably the most prevalent. I mean, certainly in the general population, it's deemed to be 3 to 5% of the general population. But in criminal justice, it's deemed to be anything from 17% to well over 36%. There's been specific studies, but even significant neuroimpairments in our criminal justice population up to 90%, 89%. One study showed in Australia a significant neuroimpairment for most young people in a detention centre.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just like you said, reports state that people with FASD are up to 19 times more likely to get in trouble with the law, and they're highly vulnerable to becoming homeless. Why is it that people with neurodisabilities are more vulnerable to finding themselves in this cyclical relationship with the criminal justice system?
Well, I mean, I think you've got to really go back to the fact that we're not preventing these children you know, from getting into trouble. We're not. We don't have an infrastructure of support through our services. These children don't get assessed or, you know, are diagnosed early enough, they're not screened. So basically, they're then going through the education system and then getting often, you know, not supported thoroughly because they have all sorts of issues around, you know, learning, memory. Not all those living with FASD, but it is a significant disability. It's not acknowledged as a disability for funding as part of our New Zealand structure of disability services support. So there's so many reasons why these children are not picked up early and supported early, and their families are not supported early, which makes them more vulnerable. They're vulnerable to becoming victims because of, you know, they're easy to exploit quite a lot of the time because they're quite often having, you know, struggles with cognitive issues, and they're very easily led, some of them, and they don't, you know, they learn differently. But if they were supported better, they probably would be a lot less likely to get into trouble. But it's just they end up fast-tracked, I think, because their behaviour is perceived to be the issue, whereas actually it's a brain injury that's not really being accommodated as we would other types of physical disability.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and this is not like a new issue. I read that in 1874 there was a petition to the House of Representatives about the danger of alcohol in Maori communities in particular, saying that our babies are not born healthy because their parents drink to excess and the children suffer. So why hasn't there been much policy development in this area in the past century and a half?
Yeah. Well, you also look at, you know, how alcohol came to Aotearoa. So, you know, the Europeans brought it with them. And so it is a consequence of settler colonialism to some extent. But the reality is that, it's a billion-dollar industry, a couple of $1 billion a year, perhaps, the government might earn on excise duty. It's something we don't want to face, I think, because alcohol is the legal drug, you know, that we have in Aotearoa. And we think of our, you know, drinking culture, even our student drinking culture, sadly, where it's so normalized. It's normalized across all cohorts of society. And therefore, we don't want to face that dark side, I think, that we have, where we're not even overdoing it, but because small amounts of alcohol can affect our children before they're born. So I think we've got to look hard at who's controlling, if you like, the alcohol industry, who's controlling the messages about, are you harmed if you drink a few too many? Whereas clearly the brain research especially, is telling us, yes, there's potential for significant harm if people are pregnant. So obviously the message is don't drink at all if you're thinking about becoming pregnant, and even be, you know, completely careful if there's any likelihood that you could become pregnant, but not making it a women's issue. It is all of our issue, and we're probably all not stepping up to the mark to address it, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what supports are there to assist people at the moment with FASD, and why aren't these very effective measures?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, there are some supports, but they're just a lot of the time it's the assessments and diagnosis, because we don't have the health services geared up to be able to provide this. So people often have to pay for assessments and diagnosis. It can cost up to $9,000 for a thorough assessment diagnosis.
Gosh,
because we're looking at the impairments across 10 brain domains, internationally recommended guidance for assessment and diagnosis. So it costs a lot. It's very intensive. We don't have kids identified when families, that perhaps where there's been an issue of drinking, families and children might be on the cusp of coming into care and so on. We don't get them assessed at that level sufficiently frequently. And then in the education, because we're not perhaps supporting those with different learning needs as much as we need to, the kids are kind of, you know, they're almost lost at an early stage, and we need to be actually identifying them, screening them through education processes a bit better. There are some agencies that work with children, obviously with disabilities, but because it's not got the disability support funding, they don't have permission. So these kids get kind of gatekept out of the services that we might give to those perhaps who have autism or other forms of disability in Aotearoa, because they're accepted to have that funding. So injustice, they can get some supports. I mean, there are, you know, through family group conferences and so on, they can get, extra support for education and activities and community service if they're doing that kind of voluntary work that they need support with. But at the same time, it's still core to go back to keep them in their families and support them better in their families. Most families I've interviewed as part of my research would say it's woeful, the lack of supports that they get, and they have to constantly battle to get any helps and supports to help them keep their children safe and well and flourishing.
My last question for you today is that a lot of reporting around FASD is heartbreaking. I mean, headlines like the article you wrote in March saying, "What sort of society leaves disabled people locked up and dying early?" I want to know what you think needs to be done to create better outcomes for people with FASD.
Well, I think we need to absolutely, I mean, not be the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, because basically we've got huge numbers already in our prisons. So we've got to backtrack and say, why are we using prisons to actually act as our disability support services? Yeah. It's just wrong. So therefore, we need to get back to when these children are in families, what are we going to do to support families at a much younger age? How do we identify them? How do we actually get their needs met? How do we actually give them the right as disabled children to be on an equal playing field as all of the children you have, you know, those who are not disabled and so on. So that it's about reframing how we view them. We're viewing them negatively as being naughty, as being poor in their behavior, and actually, you know, as willfully deviant, whereas in fact, most of the time they have a brain injury. In the similar way that we might look after somebody with Alzheimer's or other types of injuries or other types of brain injuries, why are we not actually looking at this group of people and actually understanding better that they are actually long-time disabled and we need to give them disability supports? They just don't get that.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for coming and talking to us today.
Yeah.
That was Professor Anita Gibbs. Anita Gibbs speaking on the detrimental relationship between fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and the criminal justice system. It is currently 11:42 here on R1 News. Up next, we have the Radio 1 Astrology Report, but before that, we have Corcovado, Quiet Night of Quiet Stars by Stan Getz, Joao Gilberto, and Astrid Gilberto. Stay tuned.
Quiet nights of quiet stars, quiet chords from my guitar, floating on the side that surrounds us. Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams, quiet walks by quiet streams, and a window that looks out on Corcovado. Oh, how lovely. Quem se ama, muita calma pra pensar e ter tempo pra sonhar. Da janela vê seu Corcovado, o Redentor, que lindo. Quero a vida sempre assim, com você perto de mim, até o apagar da velha chama. E eu que era triste, descrente desse mundo, ao encontrar você eu conheci o que é felicidade, meu amor.
Aloha, tēnā koutou, g'day, and welcome back to a masterclass in broadcasting. This is, of course, the Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi Astrology Report. Let's dive in and see what the stars are cooking for us today. Up first, we've got the Catty Leo. Nā, inayane, your business acumen will come out, dear Leo, as gentle Taurus Sun offers a sloppy kiss to passionate Mars. This will activate your solar 8th and 10th houses, which give you the sociopathic business powers of Christian Bale from American Psycho and Leo DiCaprio from Wolf of Wall Street. You should use this capitalistic cosmic climate to network and demand a raise, Leo. Everyone will be straight hypnotized by the sheer girth of your synergy. As the day goes on, you'll feel the vocational powers disappear, leaving you quite vulnerable and tired. Go wash all that dirty money you made today by having a nice bath. However, if you are a truly feline Leo and you're afraid of water, you may need to invest in some yoga classes to clean those hard-to-reach areas.
Now on to you grimy Virgos. Love is in the air today, you randy hornbags. As the Taurus Sun forms a seductive connection to passionate Mars, you'll be feeling something sweet. Utilize this sensual moment to hack away at your romantic goals. The universe is calling to you, Virgo, and you can leave her on hold or face the future and pick up the phone. Just this once, you're allowed to dream big and manifest the life you desire, and it wouldn't be the same without that someone special. You could arrange a date with that Tinder cutie. Just be sure to touch some grass before anything happens. As the moon continues its journey through caring Cancer, you'll feel the need to socialize. I recommend you go catch up with your old high school buddies. You know the ones you haven't spoken to in years. Go head uptown with them, get loaded on alcohol and nostalgia, and get reminded why you don't hang out with those friends anymore.
This has, of course, been the Radio 1 Astrology Report. I hope it's been very informative for everyone involved. It is currently 11:47 here on R1 News. Up next, we have Off to Market with Otago Farmers Market General Manager Michelle Driscoll. But before we hear from them, we have Banana Pancakes by Jack Johnson. Stay tuned.
Can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. But baby, you hardly even notice when I try to show you. Song is meant to keep you doing what you're supposed to. Waking up too early, maybe we could sleep. Make you banana pancakes, pretend like it's the weekend now. We could pretend it all the time, yeah. And can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. But just maybe, like a ukulele, mama made a baby. Really don't mind the practice, cause you're my little lady. Lady, lady, love me, cause I love to lay here lazy. We could close the curtains, pretend like there's no world outside. Then we could pretend it all the time, Lord. And can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. Ain't no need, ain't no need. Can't you see, can't you see? Rain all day and I don't mind. But the telephone singing, ringing, it's too early, don't pick it up. We don't need to, we got everything we need right here, and everything we need is enough. Just so easy when the whole world fits inside of your arms. Don't really need to pay attention to the alarm. Wake up slow, wake up slow. But baby, you hardly even notice when I try to show you this song is meant to keep you from doing what you're supposed to. Waking up too early, maybe we could sleep. Make you banana pancakes, pretend like it's the weekend now. We could pretend it all the time, yeah. And can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. Ain't no need, ain't no need. Rain all day and I really, really, really don't mind. Can't you see, can't you see?
That was Banana Pancakes by Jack Johnson. It is currently 11:51 on the R1 News, and it is off to market. It is time for the market with Michelle Driscoll. Ah, Michelle, are you there?
Good morning. Hi there.
Good morning. How's it going?
Good, thank you.
Ah, fantastic, fantastic. So, we were thinking, you know, what's happening at the farmers market this week, tomorrow?
Well, it should be actually a busy one with all the graduation peeps in town, and yeah, we'll have lots of ready to eats for everyone for brunch.
Cool.
It's a good idea to get down there before the parades and graduations. There's plenty of time.
Do some of the ready to eat stalls kind of you know, mass prepare for graduation for a higher demand?
I think they probably make sure they've got more on board, definitely, on those days. And definitely, they ended up going through more coffee and everything. So, yeah, they're always, historically, they've always been much busier weekends.
And it is a very busy weekend. It's also Mother's Day on Sunday.
I know, yeah.
What are some things that people can get from the market as some locally sourced gifts this year?
Well, there's lots of, you know, you can buy big or little things. There's pineapple rum. There's some beautiful rosés from Judge Rock Wines. There's flowers. You can get just cut flowers and put a bunch together from Merrill, or there'll be a few bouquets at Matheson and Roberts. They do gorgeous flowers from the Lee Valley. And then, you know, you take them out for mum out for brunch, or there's things like little Portuguese tarts from Dulce Vita, which always look gorgeous. I'm just thinking, like, for my mum, I'll probably get some Portuguese tarts and maybe some nice fresh blue cod, and some flowers, something like that would be a nice mix. But you know, there's a good selection of all sorts, really. There's also, like, Tart and Zari do wonderful pickles, which she uses an old family Goan recipe. An old family recipe from Goa, which has been handed down, and they're gorgeous, like, you know, carrot pickles and all sorts of interesting things. But she actually does a student discount as well, a 10% discount with students with ID, and 50 cents off the jar return swap. So she's all about working sustainably as well. But they're really, really delicious. I've got friends all around the country that I often get to send carrot pickle because they're all addicted to it.
Sounds like a very delicious treat. You mentioned blue cod. Now, I'm kind of in the mood to maybe cook some fish in the near future. What kind of local fish can you buy at the farmer's market? Is there much of it?
There's only a few varieties usually, because it's always within the region, the greater region out there in the sea. And there's always often sole. And blue cod's my favourite.
Blue cod's delicious.
As a treat. And there's often salmon. And it's fresh, you know, straight off the boat. So it's pretty good from harbour fish. And also people often get there quite early if they want to get a whole fish, if they know what to do. People think the whole nose-to-tail use of a fish, which is great.
Yeah, nothing left behind.
Yep,
nothing wasted.
Exactly.
It's a good philosophy.
No. Yep. And with ready-to-eat, like, there's so many. I count it. There's about 13, including beverages this weekend, selling ready-to-eat. So there's lots of options, like Whitestone Cheese. They do a cheese roll, which is really good, or they do halloumi chips, which is really nice. They're up on the platform. So freshly cooked halloumi chips, which is,
They sound delicious.
Sounds
like quite a good variety and diversity.
Yeah, and I mean, there's about 55 vendors currently at the market, so that's still a really good selection to choose from. And you know, you can dine in outside. It's looking a fairly warmish weekend. 18 degrees this weekend. There's a Rainwater Brewed craft beer from Catlin's, which is. I don't drink beer, but I know that's quite popular. And lots of cheese. You could do a cheese board for, you know, graduation, after graduation goodies. You know, cheese board with, there's cheese drawers from Catlin's Kitchen, and there's pâtés and, you know, all sorts of goodies if you're needing, got the family around. And it's just a good way to really shop your way around Otago in one hit.
Great. Well, it sounds like a great day for the market tomorrow. A lot going on.
And there's a bit of music. There'll be always be a bit of music playing, some of our buskers. And, yeah, and it's just a good way to catch up with friends and family, really.
Yeah,
now that we can actually sit down and enjoy that.
Yeah.
But still, you know, we'd still encourage mask use, which would be good. But that just means people can actually enjoy the market for a bit more of a whole morning.
No, for sure. It sounds like a very, very, very stacked market tomorrow.
Yeah, that should be good.
All right, thank you so much for coming on to Off to Market.
You're welcome.
To speak with us. Awesome. We'll hear from you next week, I'm sure.
Okay.
Cool.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Take care. Have a good Mother's Day. Bye. That was Michelle Driscoll, the General Manager from the Otago Farmers Market, and that was Off to Market. It's been a very, very busy day on the on the show, hasn't it, Maria?
Yeah, indeed.
Should we run through some of the things we've discussed?
Yeah. First up, we had Trent Smith in for Business as Usual. As usual. Our wee segment here on our Friday R1 News. We talked about debt and the government's debt ceilings that's coming up, changing, what this means, and all that confusing but very interesting economic stuff.
And the verdict from Trent seemed to be that debts aren't as important as they're made out to be.
Yeah, very interesting.
Funnily enough. We had a feature from, well, myself, about abortion rights being challenged in the United States and the kind of political fallout from that, what the draft opinion from the Supreme Court means if Roe versus Wade is overturned, what that would mean here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, how it would embolden the anti-choice movement domestically. But ultimately, you know, we've got to help them by helping ourselves. We've got to make sure that we have a strong right, abortion rights here, is the verdict from Emma Shepherd from ALRANZ.
And then I spoke with Professor Anita Gibbs about the detrimental relationship between those with neurodisabilities and the criminal justice system, and how we need a put a little bit more focus onto fixing this issue.
Yeah, and then we had the astrology report where we covered what's going to happen for Leos and Virgos today.
And then, of course, as we just heard, off to market with Michelle Driscoll about all the exciting things coming up at the market tomorrow. Yeah. So that's been our show for Rāmeri Friday, the 6th of May on R1 News. Don't forget, it's Mother's Day on Sunday. Up next, we have a song by Israeli Chicks called I Love You, Mum.
Remember to tune in weekdays 11 to 12 a.m. for your dose of current news on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi, Puritia ki e raka. Stay based.
Thanks for listening to Radio 1 91 FM podcast. All of our content lives online at r1.co.nz.